Chapter 24. The entrance to Mount Tantis was a glint of metal nestled cozily beneath an overhang of rock and vegetation. Between them and it, just visible from their hilltop vantage point, was a clearing with a small city lying in it. "What do you think?" Luke asked.
"I think we find another way in,"
Han told him, bracing his elbows a little harder into the dead leaves and trying to hold the macro binoculars steady. He'd been right. There was a stormtrooper guard station just off the metal doors.
"You never want the front door anyway."
Luke tapped his shoulder twice, the signal that he'd picked up someone coming. Han froze, listening. Sure enough, there was a faint sound of clumping feet in the underbrush. A minute later, four Imperial troops in full field gear came out of the trees a few meters further down the hill. They walked straight past Han and Luke without so much as looking up, disappearing back into the trees a few steps later.
"Starting to get pretty thick," Han muttered.
"I think it's just the proximity to the mountain," Luke said. "I still don't get any indication that they know we're out here."
Han grunted and shifted his view to the village poking out of the clearing down below them. Most of the buildings were squat, alien-looking things, with one really good-sized one facing into an open square. His angle wasn't all that good, but it looked like there were a bunch of Posadans hanging around near the front edge of the big one. A town meeting, maybe?
"I don't see any sign of a garrison down there," he said, sweeping the macro binoculars slowly across the village. "Must be working directly out of the mountain."
"That should make it easier to get around it."
"Yeah,"
Han said, frowning as he swung the macro binoculars back to the town square. That crowd of Posadans he'd noticed a minute ago had shifted into a sort of semicircle now, facing a couple more of the walking rock piles, standing with their backs to the big building. And it was definitely getting bigger.
"Trouble?" Luke murmured.
"I don't know,"
Han said slowly, wedging his elbows a little tighter and kicking the magnification up a notch.
"There's a big meeting going on down there. Two Posadans. But they don't seem to be talking, just holding something."
"Let me try," Luke offered. "There are Jedi techniques for enhancing vision. Maybe they'll work on a macro binocular image."
"Go ahead,"
Han said, handing over the macro binoculars and squinting at the sky. There were a few wispy clouds visible up there, but nothing that looked like it was going to become a general overcast anytime soon. Figure 2 hours till sundown, another half hour of light after that. Luke said.
"What is it?"
"I'm not exactly sure,"
Luke said, lowering the macro binoculars.
"But it looks to me like what they're holding is a data pad."
Han looked out toward the city.
"I didn't know they used data pads."
"Neither did I,"
Luke said, his voice suddenly going all strange. Han frowned at him. The kid was just staring at the mountain, a funny look on his face.
"What's wrong?"
"It's the mountain," he said, staring hard at it. "It's dark. All of it."
"Dark?"
Han frowned at the mountain. It looked fine to him.
"What are you talking about?"
"It's dark," Luke repeated slowly. "Like Merkur was."
Han looked at the mountain. Looked back at Luke.
"You mean like in a bunch of Isla Mari cutting off the Force?"
Luke nodded.
"That's what it feels like. I won't know for sure until we're closer."
Han looked back at the mountain, feeling his stomach curling up inside him.
"Great,"
he muttered.
"Just great. Now what?"
Luke shrugged.
"We go on. What else is there?"
"Getting back to the Falcon and getting out of here, that's what,"
Han retorted.
"Unless you're really hot to walk into an Imperial trap."
"I don't think it's a trap,"
Luke said, shaking his head thoughtfully.
"Or at least, not a trap for us. Remember how that contact I told you about with Sabaoth was suddenly cut off?"
Han rubbed his cheek. He could see what Luke was getting at, all right. The Isla Mari were here for Sabaoth, not him.
"I'm still not sure I buy that," he said. "I thought Sabaoth and Thrawn were on the same side. Mara said that herself."
"Maybe they had a falling out,"
Luke suggested.
"Or maybe Thrawn was using him from the start and now doesn't need him anymore. If the Imperials don't know we're here, the Isla Mari must have been meant for him."
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter much who they were meant for,
Han pointed out.
They'll block you just as well as they will Sabaoth. It'll be like Merkur all over again.
Mara and I did okay on Merkur, Luke reminded him. We can handle it here. Anyway, we've come too far to back out now.
Han grimaced.
But the kid was right.
Once the Empire gave up on this deserted planet routine, chances were the next New Republic team wouldn't even make it into the atmosphere.
You're gonna tell Mara before we get there?
Of course.
Luke looked up at the sky. But I'll tell her on the way. We'd better get moving while we still have daylight.
Right,
Han said, giving the area one last look before he got to his feet. Force or no force, it was up to them.
Let's go.
The others were waiting just around the other side of the hill.
How's it look?
Lando asked, as Han and Luke rejoined them.
They still don't know we're here,
Han told him, looking around for Mara. She was sitting on the ground near 3PO and R2, concentrating on a set of 5 stones she'd gotten to hover in the air in front of her. Luke had been teaching her this kind of stuff for days, and Han had finally given up trying to talk the kid out of it. It looked like the lessons were going to be a waste of time now anyway.
You ready to take us to this back door of yours?
I'm ready to start looking for it,
she said, still keeping the stones in the air.
As I told you before, I only saw the air system equipment from inside the mountain. I never saw the intakes themselves.
We'll find them,
Luke assured her, passing Han and walking over to the droids.
How are you doing, 3PO?
Quite well, thank you, Master Luke,
the droid answered primly.
This route is so much better than many of the earlier ones.
Beside him, R2 trilled something.
R2 finds it so as well.
Don't get too attached to it,
Mara warned, finally letting the stones drop as she stood up.
There probably won't be any Minersi trails up the mountain for us to follow. The Empire discouraged native activity anywhere nearby.
But don't worry,
Luke soothed the droids.
The Nogri will help us find a path.
Freighter Garrett's Gold, you're cleared for final approach.
The brisk voice of Bill Bringing Control came over the Etherways bridge speaker.
Docking platform 25. Straight vector is indicated to the buoy. It'll feed you the course to follow to the platform.
Acknowledged, Control, Ave said, keying in the course that had come up on the nav display. What about the security fields?
Stay on the course you're given and you won't run into them. Deviate more than about 15 meters any direction, and you'll get a good bump on the nose. From the looks of it, I don't think your nose can afford any more bumps.
Ave threw a glare at the speaker. One of these days he was going to get real tired of Imperial sarcasm.
Thank you, he said, and keyed off. Imperials are such fun to work with, aren't they?
Gillespie commented from the co-pilot station.
I like to imagine what his expression is going to be like when we burn out of here with their CGT,
Abe said.
Let's hope we're not around to find out for sure, Gillespie said. Pretty complicated flight system they've got here. It wasn't like this before that raid of Mazix,
Abe said, gazing ahead through the viewport. Half a dozen shield generators were visible along his approach vector, floating loose around the area and defining the flight path the buoy would supposedly give him.
Probably supposed to keep anyone else from flying around the shipyards any old way they want to.
Yeah, Gillespie said. I just hope they've got all the glitches out of the system.
Me too, Abe's agreed. I don't want them to know how much of a bump this ship can really take.
He glanced down at his board, confirming his vector, and then checking the time. The New Republic fleet ought to be hitting Tan Green in a little over 3 hours. Just enough time for the Etherway to dock, unload the specially tweaked tractor beam burst capacitors they were courteously donating to the Empire's war effort, and get into backup position for Mazix's attempt to grab the CGT from the main command center 8 docking platforms away.
There goes Elor,
Gillespie commented, nodding off to starboard. Aves looked.
It was the Chimere, all right, with a Clivering running in flanking position beside it.
Beyond it, he could see the starry ice drifting in toward a docking platform near the perimeter. Near as he could tell, everything seemed to be falling into place.
though with someone like Thrawn in charge, appearances didn't mean much. For all he knew, the Grand Admiral might already know all about this raid, and was just waiting for everybody to sneak in under the net before wrapping it around them.
"You ever hear anything else from Card?"
Gillespie asked, a little too casually.
"He's not deserting us, Gillespie," Aves growled. "If he says he has something more important to do, then he has something more important to do. Period."
"I know,"
Gillespie said, his voice noncommittal.
"Just thought some of the others might have asked."
Aves grimaced. Here they went again.
He'd have thought that opening up Barrier's treachery at Hijarna would have settled this thing once and for all.
He should have known better.
"I'm here," he reminded Gillespie. "So are the Starry Ice, the Dawnbeat, the Last Resort, the Amanda Fallow, the..."
"Yeah, right, I get the point,"
Gillespie interrupted.
"Don't get huffy at me. My ships are here, too."
"Sorry," Abe said. "I'm just getting tired of everybody always being so suspicious of everybody else."
Gillespie shrugged.
"We're smugglers. We've had a lot of practice at it. Personally, I'm surprised the group's held together this long. What do you think he's doing?"
"Who, Card?"
Abe shook his head.
"No idea. But it'll be something important."
"Sure."
Gillespie pointed ahead.
"That the marker buoy?"
"Looks like it,"
Aves agreed.
"Get ready to copy the course data."
"Ready or not, here we go."
The orders came up on Wedge's comm screen, and he gave them a quick check as he keyed for the squadron's private frequency.
"Rogue Squadron, this is Rogue Leader," he said. "Orders. We're going in with the first wave, flanking Admiral Akbar's command cruiser. Hold position here until we're cleared for positioning. All ships acknowledge."
The acknowledgements came in, crisp and firm, and Wedge smiled tightly to himself. There had been some worry among Akbar's staff, he knew, that the long flight here to the rendezvous point might take the edge off those units that had first had to carry out decoy duty near the supposed tan-green jump-off point. Wedge didn't know about the others, but it was clear that Rogue Squadron was primed and ready for battle.
"You suppose Thrawn got our message, Rogue Leader?"
Jansen's voice came into Wedge's thoughts.
Their message?
Oh, right. That little conversation outside the Mumbry Storv Cantina with Talon Card's friend Aves. The one Hobie had been firmly convinced would be going straight to Imperial Intelligence.
"I don't know, Rogue Five," Wedge told him. "Actually, I sort of hope it didn't."
"Kind of a waste of time if it didn't."
"Not necessarily,"
Wedge pointed out.
"Remember, he said they had some other scheme online that they wanted to coordinate with ours.
Anything that hits or distracts the Empire can't help but do us some good."
"They probably just got some smuggling drop planned,"
Rogue Six sniffed.
"Hoping to run it through while the Imperials are looking the other way."
Wedge didn't reply. Luke Skywalker seemed to think Card was quietly on the New Republic side, and that was good enough for him. But there wasn't any way he was going to convince the rest of his squadron of that. Someday, maybe, Card would be willing to take a more open stand against the Empire. Until then, at least in Wedge's opinion, everyone who wasn't on the Grand Admiral's side was helping the New Republic, whether they admitted it or not. Sometimes even, whether they knew it or not. His comm display changed. The Vanguard cone of Star Cruisers had made it into their launch formation. Time for their escort ships to do the same.
"Okay, Rogue Squadron," he told the others. "We've got the light. Let's get to our places."
Easing power to his X-Wing's drive, he headed off toward the running lights ahead. 2.5 hours, if the rest of the fleet assembly stayed on schedule, and they'd be dropping out of light speed within spitting distance of the Bilbringi shipyards. A shame, he thought, that they wouldn't be able to see the looks on the Imperials' faces. The latest group of reports from the Tan-Green region scrolled across the display. Pelion skimmed through them, scowling blackly to himself. No mistake, the Rebels were still there. Still slipping forces into the region. Still doing nothing to draw attention to themselves.
and in 2 hours, if intelligence's projections were even halfway accurate, they would be launching an attack on an effectively undefended system.
They're doing quite well, aren't they, Captain? Thrawn commented from beside him. A very convincing performance all around.
Sir,
Pelion said, fighting to keep his voice properly deferential.
I respectfully suggest that the rebel activity is not any kind of performance. The preponderance of evidence points to Tangreen as their probable target. Several key starfighter units and capital ships have clearly been assembled at likely jump-off points to...
Wrong, Captain. Thrawn cut him off coolly. That's what they want us to believe. But it's nothing more than a carefully constructed illusion. The ships you refer to pulled out of those sectors between 40 and 70 hours ago, leaving behind a few men with the proper uniforms and insignia to confuse our spies. The bulk of the force is even now on its way to Bilbringi.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, with a silent sigh of defeat. So that was it. Once again, Thrawn had chosen to ignore his arguments, as well as all the evidence, in favor of nebulous hunches and intuitions. And if he was wrong, it wouldn't simply be the Tangreen Ubiquitrate base that would be lost. An error of that magnitude would shake the confidence and momentum of the entire Imperial war machine.
All war is risk, Captain, Thrawn said quietly. But this is not as large a risk as you seem to think. If I'm wrong, we lose one Ubiquitrate base. Important, certainly, but hardly critical. He cocked a blue-black eyebrow. But if I'm right, we stand a good chance of destroying 2 entire Rebel sector fleets. Consider the impact that will have on the current balance of power.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said dutifully. He could feel Thrawn's eyes on him. You don't have to believe, the Grand Admiral told him. But be prepared to be proved wrong.
I very much hope so, sir,
Pelion said. Good. Is my flagship ready, Captain?
Pelion felt his back stiffen a bit, in old parade ground reflex.
Chimera is at your full command, Admiral.
Then prepare the fleet for hyperspace.
The glowing eyes glittered.
And for battle.
There were no real paths up Mount Tantus, but as Luke had predicted, the Nogri had a knack for terrain. They made remarkably good time, even with the droids slowing them down, and as the sun was disappearing below the trees, they reached the air intakes. It was not, however, exactly the way Luke had envisioned it. Looks more like a retractable turbolaser turret than an air system, he commented to Han as they moved cautiously through the trees toward the heavy metal mesh and even heavier metal structure the mesh was set into.
Reminds me of the bunker we had to break into on Endor, Han muttered back. Except with a screen door. Easy. They might have intruder detectors.
Anywhere else, Luke would have reached out into the tunnel with the Force. Here, within the Isla Mare effect surrounding him, it was like being blind. Like being on Merkur again. He looked at Mara, wondering if she was having similar thoughts and memories. Perhaps so. Even in the fading light, he could see the tension in her face. An anxiety and fear that hadn't been there before they entered the Isla Mare bubble. So what now? She growled, flashing a brief glare at him before looking away again. We just sit around until morning? He had his macro binoculars trained on the intake. Looks like the computer outlet there on the wall under the overhang, he said. The rest of you stay put. I'll take R2 over and try plugging him in. Beside Han, Chewbacca rumbled a warning.
Where?
Han muttered, drawing his blaster. The Wookiee pointed with one hand as he unlimbered his bowcaster with the other. The whole group froze, weapons ready. And it was then that Luke first heard the faint sounds of distant blaster fire. From several kilometers away, he thought, possibly somewhere down the mountain. But without his Jedi enhancement techniques, there was no way to know for sure. From much closer came a bird-like warbling.
A group of Minurci approach,
Equicor said, listening intently to the signaling.
The Nogri have stopped them. They wish to come forward and speak.
Tell them to stay there, Han said, hesitating just a second before holstering his blaster. Pulling the bleached Satna Chaka clawbird out of a pocket of his jacket, he beckoned to 3PO. Come on, Goldenrod. Let's go find out what they want. Ekrakor muttered an order, and one of the Nogri moved silently to Han's side. Chewbacca stepped to the other side, and with a helplessly protesting 3PO trailing along, they all headed off into the trees. R2 gurgled uncomfortably, his dome head swiveling back and forth between Luke and the departing 3PO.
He'll be all right, Luke assured him. Han won't let anything happen to him.
The squat droid grunted, probably expressing his opinion of the depths of Han's concern for 3PO.
We may have more problems than 3PO's health to worry about in a minute, Lando said grimly. I thought I heard blaster fire from down the mountain.
I did too, Mara nodded. Probably coming from the storehouse entrance.
Lando looked over his shoulder at the massive air intake.
Let's see if we can get that vent open. At least it'll give us another direction to go if we need to jump.
Luke looked at Mara, but she was avoiding his eyes again.
All right, he told Lando. I'll go first. You bring R2.
Cautiously, he moved through the trees toward the intakes. But if there were any anti-intruder defenses, they didn't seem to be working anymore. He made it in under the metal overhang without incident, and with the wind of the inrushing air ruffling through his hair, he studied the mesh. At this distance, he could see that it was more like a heavy grating, with each strand of what had looked like mesh actually a plate extending several centimeters back into the tunnel. A formidable barrier, but nothing his lightsaber couldn't handle. There was the sound of a footstep through leaves, and he turned as Lando and R2 came up.
The outlet's over there, R2, he told the droid, pointing to the socket in the side wall. Plug in and see what you can find out.
The droid warbled acknowledgement, and with Lando's help, maneuvered his way across the rough ground.
It's not just going to open up for you, Mara said from behind him.
R2's going to check it out, Luke told her, peering at her face.
You all right?
He expected a sarcastic comment, or at least a withering glare. He wasn't prepared for her to reach out and grip his hand.
I want you to promise me something,
she said in a low voice.
Whatever it costs, don't let me go over to Sabaoth's side. You understand? Don't let me join him, even if you have to kill me.
Luke stared at her, an eerie chill running through him.
Sabaoth can't force you to his side, Mara, he said. Not without your cooperation. Are you sure of that? Really sure?
Luke grimaced. There was so much he didn't know yet about the Force.
No. Neither am I, Mara said. That's what worries me. Sabaoth told me back on Jomark that I'd be joining him. He said it again here, too, the night he arrived.
He may have been mistaken, Luke suggested hesitantly. Or lying.
I don't want to risk it. She gripped Luke's hand tighter. I'm not going to serve him, Skywalker. I want you to promise that you'll kill me before you let him do that to me.
Luke swallowed hard. Even without the Force, he could hear in her voice that she meant it. But for a Jedi to promise to cut someone down in cold blood...
I'll promise you this, he said instead. Whatever happens in there, you won't have to face him alone. I'll be there to help you.
She turned her face away.
What if you're already dead?
So it was down to this. The same battle she'd been fighting with herself since the day they met.
You don't have to do it, he said quietly. The Emperor's dead. That voice you hear is just a memory he left behind inside you. I know that, she snapped,
a touch of fire flickering through the cold dread.
You think that makes it any easier to ignore?
No, he conceded.
But you can't use the voice as an excuse either. Your destiny is in your hands, Mara. Not Sabaoth's or the Emperor's. In the end, you're the one who makes the decisions. You have that right. And that responsibility.
From the forest came the sound of footsteps.
Fine,
Mara growled.
dropping Luke's hand and taking a step back away from him.
You spout philosophy if you want to. Just remember what I said.
Spinning around, she turned to face the approaching group.
So what's going on, Solo?
We've picked up some allies,
he said, throwing what looked like a frown in Luke's general direction.
Sort of allies, anyway.
Hey, 3PO, Lando called, waving to him. Come over here, will you? And tell me what R2 is all excited about.
Certainly, sir,
3PO said, shuffling over to the computer terminal. Luke looked back at Han.
What do you mean, sort of allies?
It's kind of confusing, Han said. At least the way 3PO translates it. They don't want to help us. They just want to go in and fight the Imperials. They followed us because they figured we'd find a back door they could get in through.
Luke studied the group of silent, four-armed aliens towering over the Nogri guarding them. All wore four or more long knives and carried crossbows. Not exactly the sort of weapons to use against armored Imperial troops.
I don't know. What do you think?
Hey, Han!
Lando called softly, before Han could answer.
Come here. You want to hear this.
What?
Han asked as they went over to the computer terminal.
Tell them, 3PO, Lando said.
Apparently, there is an attack taking place at the main entrance to the mountain,
3PO said, in that perennially surprised manner of his.
R2 has picked up several reports detailing perimeter guard troop movements into the area.
Who's attacking?
Han cut him off.
Apparently some of the Passadans from the city. According to the gate reports, they demanded the release of their lord Savioth before they attacked.
Han looked at Luke.
A data pad.
Makes sense, Luke agreed. A message from Savioth inciting them to attack. I wonder how he managed to smuggle it out to them.
Confirms he's been locked up anyway, Mara put in. I hope they've got some good guards on his cell.
Pardon me, Master Luke,
3PO said, cocking his head to one side.
But as to the data pad Captain Solo mentioned, I would suggest it arrived the same way the weapons did, according to reports.
What kind of weapons?
Han said.
I was getting to that, sir. According to gate reports, the attackers are armed with blasters, portable missile launchers, and thermal detonators. All quite modern versions, if reports are to be believed.
Never mind where they got them from, Lando said. The point is that we've got a custom-cut diversion here. Let's use it while it's still there.
Chewbacca grumbled suspiciously.
You're right, pal,
Han agreed, peering into the grating.
It's awfully convenient timing. But Lando's right. We might as well go for it.
Lando nodded.
Okay, R2. Shut it all down.
The squat droid chirped acknowledgement, his computer arm rotating in the socket. The inflow of air across Luke's face began to decrease, and a minute later had stopped completely. R2 warbled again.
R2 reports that all operating systems of this intake have been shut down. He warns, however, that once the duty cycle has ended, the dust barriers and driving fields may be reactivated from a central location.
Better get moving then,
Luke said, igniting his lightsaber, and stepping over to the intake. Four careful slices later, they had their entrance.
Looks clear,
Han said, climbing gingerly through the opening and stepping over to the limited protection of the side wall.
Got maintenance lights showing up and down the tunnel a ways. R2, you get us any floor plans for this place?
The droid jabbered as he rolled through the opening.
I'm terribly sorry, sir. He has full schematics for the air duct system itself, but he says that further information on the facility was not available at this terminal.
There'll be other terminals down the line, Lando said. Are we leaving a rear guard?
One of the Nogri will stay,
Ekrakor mewed at Han's elbow.
He will keep the exits clear.
Fine, Han said. Let's go.
They were 50 meters down the tunnel and approaching the first of the dim maintenance lights Han had spotted before Luke suddenly noticed that the silent Minershi had followed them in.
Han, he murmured, gesturing behind them.
Yeah, I know, Han said. What did you want me to do, tell him to go home?
Luke looked back again. He was right, of course. But knives and crossbows against blasters.
Ekrakor.
What is your command, son of Vader?
I want you to assign two of your people to go with those Minurshi, he told the Nogri. They're to guide them and help them with their attacks.
But it is you we must protect, son of Vader,
Ekrakor objected.
You will be protecting me, Luke said. Every Imperial the Minurshi can pin down will be one less for us to worry about. But they can't pin any troops down if they're killed in the first sortie.
The Nogri made an unhappy-sounding noise in the back of his throat.
I hear and obey,
he said reluctantly. He gestured to two of the Nogri, and as Luke watched them drop back down the tunnel, he caught a quick look at Mara's face as she passed one of the lights. The dread was still there, but along with it was a grim determination. Whatever was waiting ahead for them, she was ready to face it. He could only hope that he was too.
There it is,
Karn announced, pointing ahead to the mountain rising out of the forest and the gathering shadows of twilight.
You sure?
Leia asked, stretching out with the force as hard as she could. Back at Bespin, during that mad escape from Lando's Cloud City, she'd been able to sense Luke's call from almost this far away. Here, now, there was nothing at all.
That's where their nav feed seems to be leading us, Karn told her. Unless they've seen through Gant's little deception and are sending us to some sort of decoy spot.
He glanced over his shoulder at her.
Anything?
No.
Leia looked out at the mountain, her stomach tightening painfully. After all their hopes and effort, they were too late.
They must already be inside.
They're heading into trouble then,
Gant spoke up from the comm station where he was still fiddling with the fine tuning on his counterfeit Imperial ID code.
Flight control says they've got a riot going on at the entrance. They're diverting us to a secondary maintenance area about 10 kilometers north.
Leia shook her head.
We're going to have to risk contacting them.
Too dangerous,
Denkin, the co-pilot, said.
If they catch us using a non-Imperial comlink channel, we're likely to get shut down.
Perhaps there is another way,
Moe Vikar said, moving to Leia's side.
Ekrakor, Clan Baktor, will have left a guard at their entrance point. There is a Nogri recognition signal that can be created with landing lights.
Go ahead, Karn said. We can always claim a malfunction if the garrison notices. Chin, Corvus, watch your scopes.
Stepping over to Dankin's board, the Nogri keyed the landing lights on and off a half dozen times. Leia stared out the viewport, trying to catch the whole mountain at once. If Han and the others had gone in above the dusk line...
Got it,
Corvus's voice came from his turbolaser turret.
Bearing 003, mark 17.
Leia looked over Karn's shoulder as the coordinates came up on his nav display. There it was, faint but visible, a flickering light.
They are there,
Moe Vikar confirmed.
Good, Karn said. Gant, acknowledge that we're proceeding to that secondary maintenance area as ordered. Better find a seat and strap down, Counselor. We're about to have an unexpected repulsor lift malfunction.
Between the trees and eroded rock outcroppings, it looked to Leia like an impossible place for a ship the size of the Wild Card to land. But Karn and his crew had clearly pulled this trick before, and with a last-second sputter of precision-aimed turbolaser fire, they created just enough of a gap to put down into.
Now what?
Dankin asked, as Karn cycled back the repulsor lifts. Karn looked at Leia, raised an eyebrow in question.
I'm going in,
Leia told him, the vision of Luke and Mara in danger hovering before her eyes.
You don't have to come along.
The Counselor and I will go look for her friends,
Karn answered Dankin, unstrapping and getting to his feet.
Gant, you'll try to convince the garrison that we don't need any assistance.
What about me?
Dankin asked. Karn smiled tightly.
You'll stay ready in case they don't believe him. Come on, Counselor.
The Nogri who'd returned their signal was nowhere in sight as they stepped out onto the Wild Card's ramp.
Where is he?
Card asked, looking around.
Waiting,
Moe Picar said, putting a hand to the side of his mouth and giving a complex whistle. An answering whistle came, shifted into a complex warble.
Our identity is confirmed,
he said.
He bids us come quickly. The others are no more than a quarter hour ahead.
A quarter hour? Leia stared out at the starlit darkness of the mountain. Too late to warn them, but maybe not too late to help.
Come on, we're wasting time, she said.
Just a minute, Card said, looking past her shoulder. We have to wait for... Ah.
Leia turned. Coming down the corridor toward them from the aft section of the ship was a middle-aged man with a pair of long-legged quadruped animals in tow.
Here you go, Captain,
the man said, holding out the leashes.
Thank you, Chin,
Card said, taking them as he squatted down to scratch both animals briefly behind the ears.
I don't believe you've met my pet fawn scores, Counselor. This one's named Drang. The somewhat more aloof one is Stern. On Merkur, they use the Force to hunt their prey. Here, they're going to use it to find Mara. Right?
The Vornskers made a strange sound, rather like a cackling purr.
Good,
Card said, straightening up again.
I believe we're ready now, Counselor. Shall we go?